Hey everybody, let's just jump right into chapter 3. That night, I dream of rare ponies, dark, deep places, and suspiciously large vegetables, cucumbers in particular. I shake off the clumsy symbolism and, rising from my bed, realize that today is the day I'm supposed to be going on a date with the billionaire Crispian May. Holy crap, I'm so nervous. What if my hair won't behave? It's bad enough that I'm not pretty or blonde or forward or any of the other things that men like, but I don't even know what to do before I date. Do I have to wax things? I don't even know how to do that. I make a cup of tea and stare into it morosely. Kate comes into the kitchen in her underwear, skimpy crop top and tiny panties. She looks glossy and blonde and shiny, like she walked out of an advertisement. Like everything I will never be. You're narrating out loud again, she says, giving me a dirty look as she takes the orange juice from the fridge. And I don't care to repeat myself. Put on some lipstick, shave your hoo-ha, and suck it up, Buttercup. You're not the first woman to feel insecure, and you won't be the last. But I don't know what to... Kate scowls. Stop thinking about it, Hannah. I know you. You'll work yourself into a goddamn stew, flake on the guy, and then cry for a month, and there is not enough weed on the whole West Coast to get me through a solid month of your bullshit. Just finish your tea, take a shower, or read your mail or something. Just chill. She takes her orange juice and walks away. I take her advice and go through my mail. Mostly junk, but there's a letter with a university crest on the envelope. Maybe they're giving me some kind of special award for my work. I open the envelope and squeal. There's a check for over $8,000. $8,000? I must have won a prize. I knock on Kate's door, but she tells me to go away, so I'm left to myself to decide what to do next. Maybe I should go and buy some new clothes, or maybe Kate will come and pick out clothes for me? No. The proper thing to do would be to call the English department and thank them for the money. So that's what I do. I call Professor Jared at once and speak to her assistant. I don't understand what I've done to deserve this, I say. But thank you. Thank you so much. Now I won't feel so bad having coffee with a billionaire. Well, tea, because I don't like coffee. Wait, says the assistant. Miss Squeal, did you read the letter? We're reimbursing your tuition. I know, it's wonderful. Thank you so much. There's a mumbling at the other end of the line. Becky, someone says in an undertone. I don't think she understands. You better talk to her. Hannah Lore, Professor Jarrett calls me by my full name. She's so proper and British. This is Professor Jarrett. Do you understand why we're reimbursing your tuition? Because I won some kind of scholarship? Professor Jarrett sighs down the phone. Oh dear, she says. Look, I think you'd better come in. Probably best I speak to you in person. Can it be this morning? I'm having coffee with a billionaire this afternoon. Another sigh. Yes, Hannah, can you be here by 11? I like Professor Jarrett, even though she's blonde. She's over 40, though, so that cancels the blondness out. When I enter her office, her expression is serious, worried, even. Hello, Hannah, she says. Please sit down. For an English professor, she doesn't have that many books in her room, and a lot of them look new. I thought people like her lived in places full of old books, with leather armchairs like the library in Beauty and the Beast. But without the dampened cups and teapots, obviously, because that would be weird. Hannah, do you have any idea why I asked you to come here today? She asks. Because the department gave me a check for $8,000? She nods. Yes, she says slowly. We reimbursed your tuition, Hannah. There's no easy way to say this, but... You started out your year, your senior year, on academic probation and went downhill from there. To be honest, I have no idea how you got that far. You're quite possibly the most illiterate student I have ever had the misfortune to teach. Everything sounds so smart in her language. She speaks with the accent of Shakespeare, Austen, and the Bronte sisters. I picture fog in the streets of old London town, of cricket on the village green. One day I will go there and become one of them. I'm way ahead already. I love tea. I'm really smart and I have off-white teeth. Professor Jarrett quirks an eyebrow. Hannah, are you even listening to a word I'm saying? Please try and pay attention. This isn't pleasant for me. I'm very fond of your mother, and I know it's not easy for her to come to terms with your difficulties. Difficulties, I say. I don't have any difficulties. I love classic British novels. This is totally my thing. Oh dear, sighs Professor Jarrett, taking a binder out of her desk drawer. As that may be, Hannah, loving them is not enough to get a degree in English literature. You also have to understand them. I understand them. Sometimes I think books are the only thing that understand me. She sighs again. Yes, she says, and opens the binder. There was this thing on Tess of the D'Urbervilles. I somehow don't think you grasp the central theme of the book, or the plot, or the characters, or the context, or the subtext, or any of it, really. No, I did, I murmur. She has a choice between a dark, secretive man who is brooding and sexy, or a man who's nice and fun, but kind of boring. Professor Jarrett takes out a sheet of pink paper I recognize last year's essay on Thomas Hardy. Right, no, says Professor Jarrett. That's not Tess of the D'Urbervilles, Hannah. Tess of the D'Urbervilles is one where an innocent country girl is raped and made pregnant against her will, exposing her to social ostracism and the cruelty of double standards concerning male and female sexual behavior. She wasn't raped, I quibble. He fed her strawberries and was sexy in a dark, brooding way. I wonder if Starbucks will bring us strawberries if we ask for them. And will he feed them to me? Oh my. Where does it say she was raped? Professor Jarrett takes off her glasses and rubs the bridge of her nose. It doesn't, but it's obvious. Did you somehow miss the part where he's shoving those strawberries in her face, forcing her to eat from his hand? He invades her personal space at every opportunity, and she hates it. Didn't you realize that in every single scene where Tess and Alec are together, she's uneasy, unhappy, or crying? Thomas Hardy wrote it that way on purpose. It's not like he goes easy on the subtext, Hannah. I'd expect a high school student to grasp this, but a college junior. I try to protest, but Professor Jarrett holds up a hand and takes out another one of my essays. And then there's this, she says. Jane Eyre. She puts her glasses back on and reads from the page. In my opinion, Jane should not have overreacted in the way she did, but instead stayed with Mr. Rochester. That way she could have married him when he was, if not conventionally hot, then at least sulky and brooding. Her punishment for spazzing out at the altar was that she had to marry him when he was all gimpy and blind. Perhaps if she had stayed, she could have prevented the conflagration, because she was good at fighting fires. She looks over her glasses at me. I mean, really, she says. In a way, I had to give you something for using the words gimpy and conflagration in the same sentence, but I don't think you really understood the book. I did, I kerfuffle, offended. Her blondness is coming out. She's mousy, and he's rich and brooding, and she gets him because he can see her inner beauty and because she's not intimidated by his broodingness. Or bigamy, adds Professor Jarrett. Look, Hannah, it's not just the fact that you didn't seem to understand a single book we studied over the past 4 years. It's also that you continually failed to hand in work that conformed to the department guidelines, tight double space on one side of the paper. I always made it look nice. Professor Jarrett shakes her head. Yes, using pink Hello Kitty notepaper you liberated from the toy shop where you worked. There was one extraordinary essay, I think it was the Mill on Floss, where you decided to zhush things up with silver pen and experimented with dotting your eyes with smiley faces. Wasn't really what we were looking for, Hannah. In over 3 years, you never once turned in a satisfactory bibliography with any of your essays. If you can't understand why we failed you, then... My head feels numb. What do you mean, failed? I mean failed. I'm sorry, Hannelore, but you failed college. We kicked you out 2 semesters ago. That's why we're reimbursing your tuition. Didn't you know? But I'm smart. I whimper, my whole life an open wound bleeding out before me. I'm a brunette, I'm deep, and I like to read classic British novels. Professor Jarrett groans. No,
You're not. Trust me, you're really not. I am. Books are in my bones and my blood, like clutchiness or biting my lip. That may be, but it doesn't matter how you feel. What mattered is that your work met a certain standard and it didn't. I'm very sorry. You're not, I spit back at her. You're never sorry. How could you be sorry? You're blonde. She frowns. I beg your pardon? You're just naturally vacuous, so of course you're going to go along with the shallow academic mainstream interpretation of these books. You don't have the depth to feel them. Really feel them. She rubs the bridge of her nose. Because of the color of my hair, is that what you're saying? Yes. Professor Jarrett sighs deeply enough to suck all the air out of the room. I don't mean to be rude, Hannah, but have you ever heard of a thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect? There you go again, I snort. All this stale academic crap means nothing. What matters is how books make you feel, not what they mean. I'm a very intense person, Professor Jarrett, and I relate to great literature. I know what it means to find yourself the object of a man's desire, to question why he might ever want a dark-haired, serious-minded like yourself over someone livelier and prettier and more obvious. I know how that feels. Super. Unfortunately, you still completely missed the point of Jane Eyre. I really didn't. I don't think I'm the one with the problem here. I just don't think you understand men. Don't I? Says Professor Jarrett, pointing to the door. Well, in that case, it's a mercy that I married a woman, isn't it? Well, that, I say, gathering up my bag, explains everything. I rush to my car in tears. I want to go home. Home to hug my thesaurus and console myself with the prolific extent of my exhaustive vocabulary. I am smart, I tell myself. I am smart. It's not my fault that blondes hate me. There are dumb brunettes, too, you know. You've shut the hell up, italicized voice. And I've known some redheads who'd be hard pushed to count their own buttocks. This isn't really the time. You, however, woo-hoo-wee, where do I even start? Right. Now my internal monologue hates me. I want to go home, but it's nearly noon, nearly time for me to meet Crispy and Nay for coffee. I'm crying, and the mascara I so inexpertly applied is streaming down my face in sad little gray tributaries. Seriously, would a moron know a word like tributaries? I think not. My nose is streaming and swollen, making my red eyes look even piggier. I've never looked so bad. I repair the damage as best as I can with a wet wipe and drive to meet Nay. How's that work? How does what work? You, driving. So far, you've glissaded across a lobby floor, tripped over a satchel strap, and nearly shanked yourself with a heavily padded corner of a toy store shelf. And we're supposed to believe that you not only passed a driving test, but are somehow allowed behind the wheel of a car? I don't know, okay? And that's the end of chapter 3. That was a short one. Okay. See you next time.